Welcome to Moco's Most Famous. I'm Joe Yashiroff. Today, we are talking to pro golfer Denny McCarthy, who's making quite a name for himself with his recent play on the PGA Tour. He's coming off his best career finish. He got his first hole-in-one, which we're going to be talking about. Denny was born in Tacoma Park, grew up in Burtonsville and Rockville, attended Georgetown Prep and then the University of Virginia. Denny, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Looking forward to talking and, having a good time today.
Absolutely. And I promise I won't ask for golf tips. Well, maybe at the end, maybe if things are going well, but we'll see how it goes, right?
That sounds good. Sounds good.
Okay. So talk to me, please, about how you've been playing on the PGA Tour. I mean, people around here know who Denny McCarthy is, and, you obviously belong on the tour, but now you've really shown that you can really compete with the big boys. How does that feel?
It feels great. Obviously, it can be challenging at times, traveling and living out of a suitcase a lot and competing against the best players in the world. But that's a challenge I've always embraced. And, this is my 6th year as a professional. This is my 4th year on the PGA Tour. And I think the biggest thing is I've always been someone who just tries to get better and the results will come. And I think I've gotten better every year to the point where I feel more comfortable each year on the PGA Tour. Just kind of trying to learn the ins and outs and learning the courses each year and getting more comfortable on them. And I think I've been taking the right steps to improve my game and, try and compete at the highest level. I've always been a heavy competitor where it doesn't matter what I'm playing, if it's golf or ping pong or darts, every little game, I'm going to try and find a way to get better at it. And that's kind of what I've done with golf throughout my career. And, obviously I'm playing some pretty nice golf right now. So I'm excited for the upcoming stretch.
You talked about your competitiveness. I know you have an older brother, and I've heard some stories that, like most younger and older brothers, I'm guessing you guys were pretty competitive with each other. How much of that growing up has helped you become the competitor that you are?
Very much so. My older brother, Ryan, he's probably my biggest fan nowadays and does a lot for me and always has very supportive words to, pick me up, whether it's, if I had a disappointing finish one week, telling me it's okay, I'll get back right into it next week. So we've kind of been best of friends, but you probably wouldn't have thought that when we were little. We were every little game, like I mentioned, ping pong. I mean, there are some paddles flung, in the heat of competition, whether it's that or we used to have a golden tee machine, which is like, simulated golf where you roll the ball. We were, baseball or football in the yard. We would always be at each other's necks. But, that helped me a ton growing up. That's part of the reason why I've been so successful and why I'm so competitive today is, having that tough brotherly love growing up, and we had a great neighborhood of kids to, play games with and whatever it may be. So I'm very lucky. I have a lot of credit due to my parents as well, taking me places, putting in the time to, take me to practices or, whatever it may be growing up. And very thankful for my parents, my family. I have a ton of family in that area, on my mom's side and my dad's side. So everyone's been very supportive of it, and I'm very lucky.
So taking on, Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson is no big deal because you've already taken on your brother, and I'm guessing that makes you battle-tested, right, to take on the greatest golfers in the world.
100%.
All right, so I talked about how well you've been doing lately. I want to talk about the Players Championship. So I know you probably weren't happy with your weekend performance, but let's talk about the first two rounds. I mean, you were right there. I think at one point you were in second place, maybe one shot back of Sergio. Mm-hmm. What was that feeling like at the time when you're in one of the biggest tournaments in the world and you're right there?
Yeah, the result might not show it, but I actually felt way more comfortable in that position than it may have seemed. The result shows that, I might have been nervous and that, I felt really comfortable, you know, I like seeing my name up there, and the more I can see my name on the top of the leaderboard, the more comfortable I'll be. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't really feel like I played great the first 2 days. I had a lot of nice saves. I hit it well, gave myself a lot of chances. And I felt like I played pretty solid on the weekend too. I was really just a couple stretches away. You know, Saturday wasn't a great day for me overall, but I hung in there to, you know, I think I parred the first 10 holes and birdied 11 to be one under, and still just really three or four back. I was still right there in the thick of things, and just had a bad stretch on Saturday and Sunday that just kind of, you know, shows up as a poor result, but I really didn't feel like I played that bad. Mm-hmm. Which can be frustrating. It happens a lot in this game. It's happened to me a lot over the last few years, where you can feel like you have a great week and not many people see it otherwise. They just see it as a 50th or 60th place finish. Right. When, you know, realistically, I felt like I still had a pretty decent chance to, you know, compete and win the golf tournament the way I played on the weekend. I was just, like I said, a couple stretches away where the scores got away from mm-hmm. me. But it was tough going into the Honda last week. You know, it was a frustrating result that I had at the Players, but at the same time, I knew I was going into an off week. I basically just told myself, just, you got to pick yourself up and give it all you have mentally and physically this week. And then, you know, after you do that, you can take a week off and relax. And that's kind of what I did this past week. It was a grind of a golf course, PGA National. Obviously everybody knows it. Everybody's notorious for balls being hit in the water and heavy yeah. winds. And, you know, my caddy and I did a really good job of just staying patient. Just trying to have fun and relaxed out there. And, it's not that easy to always do after a week like the Players. So, I'm proud of the way I picked myself up and, you know, gave myself another good chance to, you know, put myself in the thick of things of a golf tournament again. And the more I can do that, I think the more I'll be more comfortable.
So now the Players, the TPC Sawgrass is no bargain either as a golf course. That's one of the hardest in the world. So you played really well at two of the toughest golf courses in the country, maybe in the world. Are you one of those players that plays better the harder the course is?
I think so. Yeah. I've always relished playing, and, you know, I've played in a couple US Opens. I played in some US Juniors and I played in seven US Amateurs. And, you know, I always relish the big tournaments, the big opportunities, the tournaments that play, you know, like a major championship. You know, not to say that I don't get up for regular tour events, because sure. I do, like, you know, it's any competition. You know, I get the competitive juices going, but for whatever reason, you know, those bigger, tougher golf courses, I think it just kind of, you know, that you need to heighten your focus and you need to be more mentally tough than you usually are for those type of things. And I think I'm ready for those type of challenges. So I think just subconsciously, I know it's going to be a grind. That's the type of player that I am. I never give up. I think that I'm just the way I think and the way, you know, my game is, I'm a grindy type of player. So I'm ready for those type of tough golf courses. Not to mention we played Bay Hill the week before, yeah. which is a brutal test in itself, and coming off of a tough West Coast for me, I didn't play very well on the West Coast. You know, it was nice. Even I think I finished 24th at Bay Hill. You know, it was nice to get some type of result coming off a poor West Coast. So it was, you know, knowing that I could play Bay Hill in really tough conditions was a good start that gave me a little boost of confidence for the Players. Obviously played a couple really good rounds, and then knowing that I was very close to having a great week at the Players, taking that into the Honda, you know, if you can play well on those three golf courses every year, then, you know, your game's in great shape. And that's a big confidence boost for me going forward for this stretch I have ahead of me.
So if we look up the word grinder in the golf dictionary, we are seeing a picture of Denny McCarthy is what you're saying.
I'm sure there's some other guys that will be there too, but I should be included in that for sure.
All right. So we talked, you talked about the Honda, tied for third, your highest finish. You had been fourth, I believe, before, but to tied for third, your highest finish. So in golf, I guess there are different levels of validation. One is getting on the tour, getting your card, making cuts, competing. But, you know, finishing third, I mean, that's got to take you up the ladder of kind of validation. I know you're trying to win, but you must feel like you are really climbing that ladder of validation.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, just like you said, you did to do it at a place like the Honda Classic, where, you know, you need to be striking the ball very, very well. You know, the strength of my game is putting, and I've been trying to get my ball striking up to the level to match my putting, and it's hard to do. So to withstand four tough days at PGA National, typically you see really good ball strikers towards the top of that leaderboard. You know, that's a big confidence boost for me to kind of show that what I've been working on ball striking wise is very close to, you know, where it needs to be, if not there, for me to compete in more golf tournaments. So, to know that I can do it for 4 days at a place like PGA National makes me believe that I can go do it basically at any golf course in the world. So, that's a huge confidence boost for me. You know, if I could have more weeks where my ball striking's at a high level to try and match my putting, if you match those two up in 1 week, then that's when you can get a great week. And obviously, yeah, the T3 finish is a very nice step, but I think the next step would be to, you know, keep putting myself there and ultimately win a golf tournament.
Danny, what would it mean to you to get that first win?
It would be amazing. I've done it at every level. It's taken some time, but I won in the Maryland area as a junior locally. And then I took that to a national level, and it took a little bit, but I did it at that level. And I did it at the collegiate and amateur level. I did it at the Corn Ferry level. It's taken a slow process at each level, but I've done it at every level. So I know that I can do it out here. And it's maybe taken a little bit longer than I would have thought or liked, but it'll be so rewarding when it does happen to know that, you know, I've won at every single level that I grew up in. It'll be amazing. It'll be probably hard to put into words. And there's a ton of people that, you know, I need to be thankful for that, you know, it's not just me in this position. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that doesn't get seen or talked about that, you know, I'm here not just because of me, but there's many people behind the scenes that have, you know, made my career happen. And, I'm thankful for all that. And, it'll just be very special when it does happen.
I've got to warn you that when you get that first win, see Sands, even if you're not a crier, he will make you cry. I hope you know that.
Yeah, I've gotten to know Steve pretty well. And, you know, we've talked, got a Maryland connection there. Steve, I guess, grew up in Maryland, from Maryland. But we've talked about Maryland a bunch, and I'm sure I'll try and fight back some tears, but I look forward to that conversation at the end of the tournament when I do get to have it with Steve.
And Steve has been on this very podcast, so you're in very good company. So nice. This week is an off week after those three tough tournaments. So what do you do in an off week besides kind of resting your mind and body? I'm sure you're not getting up at noon watching Netflix all day, I'm guessing.
No, I have slept in the last few days, though. It's felt nice for sure. But, you know, I haven't touched a club in a few days, which is kind of how I like it. I played 5 weeks in a row on the West Coast, off week, and three in Florida. So I played 8 out of 9 weeks, basically. So I don't mind putting the clubs down for 2 or 3 or 4 days. It's a nice way to kind of just relax, and also just kind of gets you excited when you do get back into it after that 3 or 4 days. So, you know, but still doing things to maintain my body, going to the gym, even just for a little quick workout each day, just maintain the physical strength. And just kind of chill around the house. I moved into a new house 3 or 4 months ago, and, you know, it's got a bunch of little games, like I mentioned. So I'm keeping myself busy and active at the house, and just a very chill off week, which is the way I like it.
Good, good. All right, let's talk about your hole in one. Your first hole in one on the PGA Tour. I'm guessing you've had other holes in one, but this was your first ever.
I've only had one. My first hole in one ever was my fourth year at the University of Virginia, and then this is technically my second hole in one. First one in a real tournament. So, it was pretty crazy. It's like, it was one of those things where, like, I've had so many close calls. It looked great in the air. Saw it take a couple bounces, and it's like, I got to the point where like I just stopped expecting them to go in. I've had so many close calls where like I just don't think they're gonna go in from what you know from the tee box. And when I actually saw it go in and had everyone react around me, it was like, oh my God, like it just seems so surreal because it hasn't happened very much in my 27, 8 years playing golf. So really cool. It was nice to be able to celebrate with the group a little bit. My parents were there. My uncle was there. My uncle got a video of it. I made an Instagram post about it. One was the tour's copy of the hole in one. And then the next video was my uncle Mike actually taking a video of my shot and saying, "Be the right club in the air."
Be the right number.
That's a pretty sweet one to have on video, especially to, you know, have it say sure. Be the right club and 2 seconds later, you know, we're reacting for my hole in one. So
did he shoot well? Will he be a cameraman for NBC?
Yeah, I mean for a camera phone, you know, not too bad of a video, especially since you know, him and my parents are not the most technologically, you know, advanced people. I'm not either, I admit, but you know, I don't think they have anyone in my family has a future with photography or anything.
I'm guessing he didn't have the Pro Tracer on his phone, correct?
He did not have the Pro Tracer on his phone. He did not.
All right, so let's go back to Montgomery County. Growing up, you in Burtonsville and then in Rockville and then going to Georgetown Prep. What do you remember from it wasn't that long ago, so I'm not making you seem like an old guy, but what do you remember from growing up in Montgomery County?
It was great. You know, I had so many friends growing up, you know, grade school and high school that I keep in touch with. And, you know, I played, honestly, basketball is probably my first love. You know, I still, you know, I have a basketball hoop here at my house in Florida and I still shoot all the time. Mm-hmm. But I played basketball K through eighth grade, St. John the Baptist, played on a couple other leagues, played my all 4 years at Georgetown Prep. So basketball is probably my first love. Obviously I'm not, I'm 5'8", so it's not great for basketball. So I quickly realized that basketball wasn't going to be in my future, but it was nice to still be able to play that through high school and make a nice little career out of it. But obviously it was going to stop once it got to high school and, you know, or once it got to college. So I kind of knew when I was going into high school that, you know, I wanted to play professional golf, and knew that I was, you know, on a nice track to do so. And, man, I love Maryland. I wish I could get back there more than I do. It's too cold there too much of the year to be able to play golf. So, you know, I moved down here after I graduated from UVA and rented a place with a few buddies, tried it out for a few years and really loved it. And so I decided to make Jupiter my home base, but, you know, I love coming back to Maryland, seeing I have a bunch of family, like I mentioned, a bunch of friends. So I love getting back and, getting to see everyone.
And, okay. So at Georgetown Prep, you played basketball all 4 years. You were a pretty good player. You say you're 5'8", you're not tall, obviously, but you were a pretty good player from what I heard. So at what point were you a better basketball player than golfer up to a certain point, I'm guessing?
No, I mean, I'd say I was probably always a better golfer. I mean, my specialty in basketball was a 3-point shot. So I was a 2-guard mostly. I didn't do much ball handling. I did in K through eighth grade, but once I got to high school, I kind of strictly became a 2-guard where I was moving a lot without the ball, trying to get open shots outside the arc. There was times where, you know, people were on me. I had to be crafty and I had some crafty little inside moves, but nothing fancy. So I was, I've got a deadly 3-pointer in it. And I'll tell you what, it's been hot the last couple of weeks shooting in my backyard too. I might be shooting it better than I'm putting right now, which is kind of scary because I'm putting it pretty well too.
The Wizards could use an extra player or two, so don't keep shooting. They might.
I think it's something that helps me, honestly. Just even if I'm not playing golf and I'm, you know, playing darts or shooting hoops, I think it's just something that darts. You know, it's point and shoot. I think it helps me even if I'm taking off time of golf. It's like it's that same should be that same reactionary type of feeling. You know, not getting too caught up in swing or golf swing on the course and just. you know, pick a target and fire and shoot. And I think that, you know, some things off the golf course just translate well onto the golf course for me. And it's just an example of that.
So I know Dustin Johnson's a hell of an athlete, hell of a basketball player. He's 6'4", I think. So you and him one-on-one, can you beat him?
Probably not, but I bet you I could beat him in a 3-point contest.
Ah, okay. Well, I hope he watches the podcast. We could set up a 3-point shooting contest with you and DJ. That would be great.
I'd like to do that.
All right. So I want to ask you about some other PGA Tour golfers. So the talk of the PGA Tour has been Bryson DeChambeau with what he has done with his body and how far he can hit it. And I don't think you were playing in his group at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, but you know what he did on the sixth hole, which is phenomenal. And not only did he do that, but he won the tournament. I mean, so to do that is one thing, to also win the tournament is another. So he's not just a long ball hitter. What are your thoughts about Bryson? Is it good for golf? Is it bad for golf?
I think it's very interesting. I think, you know, he's always been someone as well that takes, you know, extreme measures to try and get better. And this is one of those, you know, he did a lot of things with putting and his golf swing, and, you know, this whole speed training and getting his body big is another one of those extreme measures to try and get himself to the top of the world. And, you know, it's very impressive what he's done, not only the speed, but, you know, obviously he's hitting the ball ridiculous amount of lengths, but just the accuracy he's doing it with too. That's not that easy at all to change your body, change how fast you're swinging, and to be able to maintain some accuracy with it as well. So, and people also forget that, you know, yes, he hits it far, but he's still got some really good touch chipping, you know, putting around the green. He's that amazing. People are talking a lot about his speed, but his short game and putting so underrated. That's a big reason why he's winning some of these big golf tournaments, is that you still got to make the putts and you still got to hit the shots around the green. And he's doing that. And I feel like that's getting overlooked as well. But what he's done with the speed is very impressive. It's never, you know, it's always a benefit if you can hit it farther. Big question is, you know, a couple of years down the road, will he be able to maintain it? Can he be able to maintain his, you know, the health with his body? Who knows? I'm sure a lot of people have these doubts and questions. But like I said, he's always been someone that goes to extreme lengths to get better. And I'm sure he's figuring out ways to try and stay healthy while he's doing all this. So it'll be interesting to see over the next few years. It'll be interesting to see if a lot of young guys maybe try and adapt some of this. I know even some of the older guys on the PGA Tour, there's guys that are, you know, 42 to 48 out there. Some of those guys have started to try and chase some speed and get some more distance. And so it's worked for some, it hasn't for others. So, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what his game looks like down a few years down the road and what it does for the game a few years down the road.
And you saw what Rory said, that he got caught up in that and it didn't work out well, at least, you know, in the immediate. So were you surprised that Rory, of all people?
A little bit. I actually, you know, we appreciate, you know, I like hearing stuff like that. I always like listening to Rory talk. I feel like he's very insightful and very honest and open with what he's been doing. So to hear that, to him to openly admit that is cool to hear. Just, you know, he's always been like that. He's always been great with the media, in my opinion. And I like the way he goes about his business. I was a little surprised, honestly, because he was already someone that already had a ton of speed, and his overall game was great. So I think it's catching up with him a little bit now, where all this speed training and, you know, swinging for the fences with the driver probably caught up with some of his finesse clubs, you know, the shorter irons, the iron. I know his iron play has been struggling the last month or so. So obviously he's taken a step back and going back to the drawing board. I'm sure he'll probably dial it back a little bit to get some of his other pieces of his game back. I have no doubt that he will. He's one of the best players in the world. And I think, you know, him admitting to himself that he probably made a mistake going to chase that speed and how it filtered into the rest of his game as a bad habit. I think, you know, him admitting that and, you know, going back to the drawing board is something that'll probably make him better. You'll probably see some great golf from him shortly, I would assume.
Tiger Woods, his horrible accident. Still don't know how he survived, but he did, I guess, because he's Tiger Woods. What was your reaction when you heard?
It was very weird. It kind of had a Kobe-esque feel to it. Just kind of hoping that what you had heard wasn't true. Hoping that he was okay. Figuring out if this report was real or not. It just had all similar feels to Kobe. And then, obviously a year ago, similar time as well, you hear that Kobe is actually true and that Kobe is gone. You start thinking, man, I hope this doesn't happen with Tiger. I hope he's okay. And, I don't know when we're going to see Tiger next, if at all. I haven't heard too much through the tour grapevine. You just hope that he's okay. I mean, I was lucky enough to actually play around with him about 3 or 4 weeks into COVID last year. The Players got canceled, and I probably played with Tiger 3 or 4 weeks later, which was a really cool experience. I play at Medalist, where a lot of great pros play, and Tiger being one of them. And got tossed into a group with JT and Ricky and Tiger somehow. Wow. And we all had our own cart, and we didn't play any type of game. Those guys, I had been playing because I was bored for a few weeks, but those guys took a few weeks off, so they were just trying to get back into it and play it for fun round. And I got tossed in and probably played 18 holes in 2 hours, all of us having our own cart. And that'd be something I'll never forget. That was a really cool round. Hopefully I get to play with him again. Hopefully he's okay to where I can play with him a year or two down the road. So that was a cool experience that I had, and I kind of thought back to that, when this news came, went down, like, man, is that going to be the only time I play with Tiger? I hope he's okay. And then I can, hopefully play with him again sometime soon.
Most would agree that, him playing golf again is not the important thing. It's can he walk again? Can he live a normal life? Can he play with his kids? But everybody wants to see Tiger play again, and I don't think it would be very smart money to bet against him doing anything, given what he's done in his career and his life. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Totally. I mean, the things he's done, how many times he's been knocked down to – only to bounce back and do something amazing again is truly incredible. And that's why he's one of the greatest athletes to ever live. He's done it time and time again. So you can never count him out.
Yeah. You mentioned COVID briefly. So it's been a terrible year, a tragic year, so many lives lost. Golf is one of the sports that from the very beginning was determined that was safe to do. It was outside. You have the social distancing, but yet you had COVID, correct? Denny?
Correct.
And what was that? How bad was it? And tell us about it.
It was, we restarted mid-May, and I got it a couple weeks into playing. I had shot 3 or 4 under first round of the Travelers up in Connecticut. Yeah. And then the night after the first round into the middle of the night, I woke up in the middle of the night. I started feeling weird Thursday night. I was like, maybe I'm just a little tired. And then I woke up the middle of that night, and I kind of sensed something was wrong. So asked if I could get tested before the first round. And sure enough, I had it. So I had to quarantine in my hotel room in Connecticut for 8 or 9 days, which wasn't too much fun at all. and then I ended up, after I talked to the doctors and, they deemed I wasn't contagious after a 10-day period. I went to my parents' house for a little bit in Maryland. Even though the doctor said I was contagious, I still kept my distance from my parents. I stayed in a room off the house. I wasn't, in and around the house that much. But it was a weird experience. I only really felt lousy for a day or two. Then it kind of went away, and then I lost smell and taste for a few days. So I definitely had some symptoms. It was strange. I just, I was just kind of thinking of, when I could get back out and play golf, and, ended up playing 2 weeks later, after my initial positive test. And, it was weird. I was continued to test positive for a couple weeks, to a month, And the doctors deemed that I was, even though I was testing positive, it was basically picking up dead particles. I was not contagious at all, but they still wanted to be safe. So I wasn't really allowed in the clubhouses for a few weeks. I was, you know, me and a few other players were in the same boat where we were basically separated from the rest of the playing field, which was a little strange, but at the same time, I was kind of over it. I was just ready to kind of just play golf. I had a few weeks off because of it, and I didn't really care what was going on. I just wanted to play, and it was just enjoyable to be back afterwards, being outside playing golf, and honestly haven't thought too much about it since.
How strange has it been, you know, playing in the midst of a global pandemic and whatever that brings, and having no fans? How odd has this experience been for you?
It's been strange. I'd say the first month or so was probably the weirdest. And then, you know, after we kind of realized that's, you know, what the new norm was, it just became normal to not have many fans. But I will say some of these Florida tournaments, Scottsdale, couple tournaments last year started allowing fans, and it just felt great to have that buzz and energy back. You know, it can get a little stale sometimes if there's no one out there. It's still coming down the stretch. If you're trying to win a tournament, there's still pressure. There's not, like, just because there's no people doesn't mean you're just out there playing for, you know, nothing. You're still out there and there's still some pressure, but at the same time, it's like, it just doesn't have the same feel without the fans. So it's been nice to feel some of that energy back. That's, you know, I love having the fans. I love interacting with them. It's just part of, you know, kind of just gets me going. It gets me amped up a little bit. So it's been really nice to have some fans back. Definitely weird at first, but now it seems like more and more tournaments are going to allow fans, which is great for us and for the fans.
I'm curious. So two golfers that I know of were born in Tacoma Park, you, and then of course, Fred Funk. How well do you know Fred Funk? And it's kind of wild that two guys from Tacoma Park are, you know, good golfers on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I know Fred a little bit. His son's a similar age to mine. His son's, I believe, a few years younger than me. But I've seen Fred at a few tournaments and, you know, always talked to him. He's always been super nice to me. And he was actually my mom's paper boy growing up, which is it makes it even smaller world.
That's great.
I always joke about that with Fred when I see him too. So we have a good relationship. I don't talk to him too much, but when we do talk, we always have a great conversation.
And he's not a tall guy either. And he was one of the shortest hitters on tour, but the straightest. And he had pound for pound, in my opinion, one of the most amazing careers, given that he couldn't hit it nearly as far as anybody, and won probably 8 times, won the Players, which is remarkable. So that's got to be a little bit inspiring, seeing a guy like that. I know you're a longer hitter than he is, but he was a grinder. He was a grinder too.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say I'm probably an average length hitter. And, you know, I can maybe go chase a little speed with the driver, but I'm never going to be somebody that bombs it, relatively speaking.
Right.
To you, I might bomb it, but to Dustin Johnson, I'm a dinker. So, but you know, it works for me. I think, you know, I've been trying to model my game somebody similar to, like, say, like a Webb Simpson or a Colin Morikawa, where those guys are similar speed to me. They're average length hitters, but they drive the ball well. They drive it straight, and then they're both very accurate iron players. Look at Colin Morikawa. You know, he's one of the best ball strikers on tour iron wise. And he's gotten his putting to a good level to where he can compete on a regular basis to try and win golf tournaments. Same with Webb Simpson. He's, you know, I actually modeled my bag setup a little bit after Webb, where I added a few more, clubs in the longer end of the bat. I added a 5-wood, another hybrid, just some more clubs to attack some par fives, me being a shorter hitter. It's helped me a lot. I feel like changing the setup. But that's type of the model game I'm going after, where I can keep the ball in front of me with the driver, still hit it a decent distance, and then, get my iron play to a level where I can give my putter a few more looks around, which is, and the putter is obviously the strength of my game. So if I can hit it maybe a few feet closer here and there, and maybe a few more greens around. Yeah. That'll be a good recipe for success for me going forward.
Who's your golf hero growing up?
I'd have to say my dad and his dad. My grandpa, we call him Bud. He passed away 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. But you know, we grew up at a small club, Argyle Country Club. Yeah. And, you know, I was always going there, in the summers. My parents always dropped me off, and Bud and I always had putting contests, and him and my dad really got me into the game. I started playing when I could walk, basically 2-3 years old is when I started swinging a club, and, something that I always loved to do. And, so I give a lot of credit to my dad and my grandpa and, Bud. And, I mark my ball, I give him a tribute. I draw a little 3-leaf clover. Obviously, being McCarthy, you got to show off the Irish heritage a little bit, but it's a little tribute to, to Bud, me marking my ball with a 3-leaf clover. So, always thinking about him, and I'm glad he got me into this crazy game.
That's great. So I always ask golfers this. So, you know, for someone like me, an average handicapper, I love playing golf. It's one of the most fun things to do. That's what you do for a living. Can you still have fun playing golf when you're not on the tour, or maybe when you are on the tour?
It depends on when you get me. Like this week, I'm not going to play golf the next few days. If you put me on a golf course today, I probably wouldn't have that much fun. Uh-huh. But if you put me in a time like, COVID, I was having fun. You know, we weren't playing any tournaments for 3 months, but I tried to take a week or two off, but I just got bored. So I started playing a bunch of games, little money games, not for much, but with good players out at Medalist. And to me, having some competition is fun. If I don't play for something, even if it's for $10, or whether it's a drink at a bar afterwards, whatever it may be, it's hard for me to get into it if I'm not playing some type of competitive match. Sure. With someone. For me, the competitive part of it is the fun part. I like to be playing for something. It just kind of depends. I enjoy, to me, competing at a high level, playing in tournaments is fun. I just, mm-hmm. I enjoy the challenge and test. I always have. And part of the reason why I love the game, and it's nice that I'm able to do it for a living, but, and make money off it. But at the same time, that's not necessarily why I do it. I do it because mm-hmm. I love it, and I want to see how great I can be.
We've talked about a bunch of stuff, but what do people not know about you that you'd like them to know about you?
I'm a pretty much an open book. I mean, like I said, you already know that I'm a competitor. I like to play a bunch of games. I'm mm-hmm. sure most people know that.
Yep.
Most people probably don't know that I like to relax in the pool and go to the beach every now and then. They probably think I'm always grinding away doing something, but I definitely like to relax. I'm not scared to lay down on the couch for 4 or 5 hours and watch a Netflix show and binge it. So not afraid to do that. I don't know if people think I do that or not, but I like to chill and like to Netflix and chill, as they say. And I like to enjoy just laying out in the pool, and I don't know what else. I don't know.
That's good. That's good. So now what you've already had what many people would consider a successful year. You know, you've gotten better. You've had your highest finish. We talked about the hole in one. What would you consider a successful season this year?
I would like to win. I think if I take care of my business and I continue to be on the trend I am with my ball striking and my whole game in general, really. I think it'll come. I need to be patient for it. I think sometimes I want it too much. I think it doesn't necessarily have to be a win, but making it to the second playoff event. It's at Caves Valley this year in Baltimore, the BMW. So the last few years I've made it to the first playoff event, and I came close to making the second one last year. So I think, you know, it would be a baby step, but a step nonetheless would be making it to the second playoff event with a chance to make it to the Tour Championship. That might, to get to the Tour Championship, it might need to take a win, but I think making it to the second playoff event would be a good goal for me. And I'm on a nice pace right now to do so, but there's still some work to be done to guarantee that second playoff event.
You'd be ready for all the friends and family and fans to come out the caves?
I would. I like seeing all family and friends, and I love when they come out to follow me. I think it excites me in a good way. I like showing some emotion, especially if I have a bunch of people that I know there. Sometimes it's hard to fist pump and get excited when I don't know anyone there, but when I have a bunch of people following me and you know, like last week at the Honda, I had a nice crew out, and on Saturday, you know, I was a couple back from the lead and made a couple nice putts and hold a bunker shot, and I showed some emotion. And so I like those opportunities where, you know, a bunch of people are watching me and they're there for me, and it's cool to see.
Denny, I really appreciate you taking time out. I kept my promise. I did not ask for any golf tips. Maybe next time. And I want to wish you continued success on the tour.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me today.
And hopefully we'll see you at Caves Valley later this year. And again, thank you very much. And I want to thank everybody for watching and listening to Moco's Most Famous. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. If you don't, maybe lie and tell them you like it anyway. And we'll see you next time on Moco's Most Famous. Have a great day, everybody.